TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. The day the WTO stood still. Lori Wallach on the 5-year record of the World Trade Organization. Since its inception on January 1, 1995, the WTO has had a major impact on areas as varied as health and the cost of drugs, food safety and production, the environment, jobs, and wages. The WTO has the power to impose changes in national, state, and local laws, regulations, and administrative procedures. It has done this even in the U.S., that most people believe to be immune due to its superpower status. The impact of the WTO has not been studied in any depth or covered in the press. Lori Wallach from Ralph Nader's organization Public Citizen is a trade lawyer and activist. She has followed global trade issues for over 10 years. On the eve of the WTO meeting in Seattle at the end of November 1999, she gave a fact-filled assessment of the 5-year record of the WTO. She spoke to an overflow audience at the teach-in of the International Forum on Globalization. Jerry Mander, the director of the IFG, is introducing her.
Our last speaker for the evening is Lori Wallach. And let me say, if someone ever asked me to name the 3 or 4 greatest activists I'd ever worked with, Lori Wallach would surely be one of them. She was a major factor in the near wins against NAFTA and against GATT and the win against the MAI, and was probably the most important single factor in why Fast Track was defeated twice in the U.S. Congress. National Journal called Lori Trade Debates Guerrilla Warrior. I think they understated it. She's a director of the Public Citizen Global Trade Watch. She's testified about all these trade agreements and other trade proposals before more than 30 congressional committees. She was a founder of the U.S. Citizens Trade Campaign. She's a graduate of Wellesley and Harvard Law School. And she has collaborated with Ralph Nader on hundreds of projects. She may be the real Ralph Nader, as far as I know. Lori.
Thank you, Jerry, for that sweet introduction. The World Trade Organization and the corporate economic globalization outcomes that you've heard about are compelling, and they're dreadful. And they're not a forecast anymore. This is the 5-year record. It's a reality. And it's actually worse than the critics predicted, which is why, as you've heard from some of my colleagues, even some people in the WTO and in our governments are starting to say, what did we get ourselves into? I didn't know it did that. The only good news about the scenario is the actual outcomes of the system are so fundamentally unacceptable that on its own merits, it simply cannot survive if it is understood. There's a lot of evidence of this, not the least of which is President Clinton's dramatic but meaningless shift from trying to jam trade agreements through Congress into the charm strategy of trying to slime them through Congress. Our goal is to be the force that makes sure that all that bad stuff gets known and there is no further sliming allowed. And my goal as the wrap-up is, if you will, to arm everyone to participate in the demise of the once certain expansion of the WTO in a Seattle Millennium Round. And and to start in the turnaround. So what's the plan to win this time? We all beat Fast Track working together because we made it a referendum on NAFTA's broken promises. We beat the MAI by applying the Dracula strategy. You put sunshine on such a horrific secret thing and poof. I think the strategy for stomping the WTO is the dead fish strategy. After 5 years of operation, this thing stinks. And all we need to do is drag it out a little farther into the sunshine so nobody could avoid smelling it anymore. And in fact, many of our governments, as you've heard, are starting to walk away from, don't make me stand by that thing. In all seriousness, the WTO's record is our best ammunition against it. This is an ongoing battle. So, a few pointers to gear us up for the battle. And I did this in the form of myths, because our opponents, who we are beating, have gone into Pinocchio mode. So I've decided I will go with their lie first and then what really went on. So myth number one, the WTO brings global free trade, and everything else is the dreaded managed trade. Well, let's get real. If you wanted to have global free trade, you'd have one page. You'd cut the tariffs, you'd cut the quotas, and that would be it. All those 19th century philosophers who came up with a theory of free trade, like David Ricardo and Adam Smith, these guys are rolling in their graves. Because, ladies and gentlemen, this 900 pages of regulations is the WTO. This is global free trade, as if this is managed trade. But it's corporate managed trade. It's just one set of rules, 900 pages of them, that basically make it possible for corporations to do whatever they want, wherever they want, and that constrains our government from local, state, federal levels, as well as international treaties, for instance, on the environment, from balancing their objectives with the public interest. Now, 500 corporations in the U.S. alone were official advisors to the negotiation of this. No joke. So it's not really surprising that we got this version of the rules. How this works precisely, just so when you say, this WTO, what a disaster, people say, oh, people don't like something, they say the WTO caused it. The WTO is going to be the cause of the common cold. Here's how it works. WTO is the name of the enforcement body itself. Hanging under it are 18 agreements that contain the substantive rules. This is a massive transformation from GATT. GATT is now one of those 18 agreements. GATT dealt mainly with tariffs and quotas and only dealt with trading goods. These other 18 agreements cover a whole new array of issues that have never been covered by global commercial rules. And the underlying agreements must be met by conforming domestic laws. The actual language in the WTO requires all member countries shall conform their laws, regulations, and administrative procedures to the undersigned agreements. Now, in some areas, there is liberalization. The problem is the barriers that are cut are things like bans on trade in asbestos, or Denmark's plan to phase out lead in products. That ban, that is a ban on lead. That is a trade barrier. The ban on beef with hormones, this is a trade barrier. These trade barriers, we frequently call them our food safety and environmental laws, must go. But this is the point where Ricardo and Smith are really getting into spin cycle. The WTO adds new trade constraints. Vandana was talking about the intellectual property rules. They're called TRIPS in GATT's, trade-related intellectual property. This sets up a 20-year monopoly worldwide on the marketing of any product that a corporation gets a patent on, and they're allowed to patent seeds, medicines, human cell lines, species. It is a trade barrier of the highest form that blocks a company from having to compete. What kind of free trade is that? That's biggest trade restraint ever. Just FYI for folks who are from the U.S., that little part of the WTO has cost us as consumers a $2 billion increase in pharmaceutical prices, just in the U.S., University of Minnesota study. Okay, myth number two. This system of corporate economic globalization is inevitable. Now, of course, you've heard that debunked already. But the reason I lay it out is, if you look at the history, it took a lot of planning and work to create these rules and then a big political fight to put them into place. And the reason I mention that is because now we're in the same place. We have fought to create some political space. We have a different worldview. We are working on what we want, and we're going to have to fight to put it into place. And it's a long project. But we are actually in gear to do to them what they did to us, but with good rules. Myth number three. These trade rules, all they do is ban discrimination. Who can be for discrimination? Why should goods from one country just be treated differently because they're from that country? Now, just FYI, the original GATT was mainly focused on those kind of principles. But the WTO was a fundamental redesign, not so much of trade, but of global regulatory policy, environmental law, legal systems. It goes way beyond subjective ideas like treat goods from different countries the same, and it imposes subjective values. It makes value choices on us about how much food safety protection will be permitted, or if we can regulate about something like genetically modified organisms. And the WTO is replete with examples. One of my favorites, which is always useful when debating the other side, is the WTO's least trade restrictive rule. This is a rule that is literally written into numerous parts of the WTO agreements, and it requires that every single policy or regulation be reviewed to determine if the way it's been done is the least trade restrictive way to do something. Now, this would be similar to writing the tax code under the causes least deforestation code. It is basically putting ahead of, which by the way I'd support, but it is putting ahead of, for instance, how effective implementation of a law is, its effect on trade. Myth number four. With free trade, the pie gets bigger, which means there's more for all. Here's the data on 5 years of WTO. The flow of trade is up, the volume is up, but inequality between countries and within countries during that five-year period has increased. The United Nations says that this attributes this to specifically these trade rules. Under the 5 years of the WTO, developing countries now get a smaller share of total world trade than before the WTO went into effect. In the U.S., everyone hears about our great job creation. Folks who are from other countries who have this bashed over their heads when told to do what we do, Department of Labor, just FYI, our Department of Labor says, you should take this home, the top four areas of U.S. job creation, waiters and waitresses, cashiers, clerks, and janitors. While these are fine jobs, these are not the jobs of the future we're being told will be created if we follow this path. These are not jobs that pay family-supporting wages or have benefits generally. Meanwhile, specific broken promise, we were told under WTO all U.S. median family wages would go up, $1,700 a year. Anyone here seen their family's median income going up $1,700 a year? Well, if you are, you're the anomaly, because statistically the average says ain't happened in any of the 5 years of the WTO. You get the picture. Myth number five, prices go down for consumers. Now, the best piece of evidence for this when you get into this fight is you say, hey, the global consumer movements were split when the GATT was created. Some of them hoped that prices going down thing would really work. Well, after 5 years of the WTO's record, the consumer groups are now united worldwide on no new round turnaround. The current rules are not working. That's the evidence you can sort of take to the bank when you have every consumer, major consumer group in the world taking that position. But also, let's just look at the data. The volume of food trade, for instance, has dramatically increased. In the U.S., food prices up 8% in the 4.5 years of WTO. Farm prices, by the way, have gone down. 50,000 U.S. farmers have gone under in the 5 years of WTO. Let me just do the GATT math, and then I'll move on to the next myth. I use pork. How appropriate for the GATT. Volume of pork trade up, 27%. Price per hog for each farmer in the U.S., down 200%. Consumer price for pork per pound, up 6%. That's the GATT math. All right, final myth. There's no room for environment, human rights, or labor in the WTO. Now, this is an important myth to debunk because the debate is not so much if or if not it should be there. It's already there. The WTO has rules that says before a country can take action to stop an invasive species infiltration that's undermining biological diversity, they must go through a bunch of WTO tests. Anyone here from Australia knows the case about your salmon, where a perfectly legitimate law that was scientifically proved got WTO tossed. WTO has a ban on prison labor, which has been interpreted to explicitly permit child labor, forced labor, and all other forms of oppressive labor conditions. WTO has worker safety standards listed as technical barriers to trade, which must be limited, etc. What there's no room for is constraints on our government's ability to do what they think is important for their populations on environment and on labor. And more importantly, there's no room for unaccountable decision-making, which, when you get down to the bottom of it, one of the biggest losers under WTO is democracy itself. So maybe we should have a Seattle WTO party. All right. No, I wouldn't advocate throwing anything into the water. A negotiator or two, but no. Okay. So the track record is our best weapon. And I've gone through some of the cases. It's a small sales pitch. But I recommend getting our book, Who's Trade Organization? Corporate Globalization and the Erosion of Democracy, which puts in understandable English the whole five-year record. But in case anyone wants to challenge you, it's got 1,400 footnotes. So it is all there. There's no fudging in there. It's totally straight up, but it's written in a way so everyone can read it. And I just want to tell one more example of what's happened, which is in the book, which is a whole trend of now under WTO companies with government support simply threatening WTO action, and that resulting in countries weakening their laws. Basically, the rest of the world saw the U.S., for instance, lose its Clean Air Act case, and we weakened our gasoline and cleanliness standards. According to our U.S. government, in the Federal Register, yes, we weakened them. So other countries have seen the big, powerful countries changing laws, and particularly the developing countries now, at the threat of a challenge to avoid what is considerable expense, even in the case where it might be a close call on the defense. Just say, we give up. We'll change the law. And perhaps the single most disgusting case of this, which I hope everyone leaves with in mind, is Gerber Baby Foods and what they did using WTO to Guatemala's implementation of the UNICEF World Health Organization Code on Baby Formula Marketing. This is a so-called Nestle's Code that was put into place to try and help make sure that mothers are not persuaded not to breastfeed by, for instance, depiction of big fat babies, which would lead an illiterate mother to purchase the product. Guatemala became UNICEF's poster child for the successful implementation of that code. It applied to domestic and foreign formulas. Gerber refused to comply and didn't really have a leg to stand on until the WTO TRIPS agreement, the intellectual property agreement. You see, they have a trademark over at Gerber of the fat baby face. So they threatened WTO action, saying that their trademark in the fat baby face trumped Guatemala's health law. And the reason we know this is because Guatemala doesn't have a staff of trade attorneys. They called us, having heard there was a consumer group that had a trade attorney. Could we win this case? Maybe they could have. They didn't have the money to take the defense. They changed the law, and now it only applies to domestic food, which is only half the market. Real story. These kind of threats are now also working on rich countries. The European Union just backed down from a U.S. threat regarding an electronics toxics reduction and recycling law. The EU just backed down in a humane trapping law after U.S. threats of action. Korea dumped two food safety laws after U.S. threats. And now we've got the Clinton administration threatening our own state governments. After the Massachusetts rule on procurement regarding Burma was WTO challenged, the Clinton administration dispatched lobbyists to the state capital of Maryland to successfully quash a similar procurement law dealing with the dictatorship in Nigeria. This law that was going to pass went down by one vote. Okay, so all of this and more is your ammunition. And here we are, just before the WTO's fifth birthday, on the eve of the so-called battle in Seattle, which, by the way, is something my colleague Mike Dolan came up with. Martin laid out the WTO booster's agenda, and many of our colleagues here have described the beginning of the turnaround.
That was Lori Wallach, Director of Public Citizens Global Trade Watch and founder of the U.S. Citizens Trade Campaign. At this point in her speech, she brought forward the impressive array of staff and volunteers who had worked on the preparation for some of the literally hundreds of conferences and events that preceded the meeting of the WTO in Seattle. Lori Wallach spoke at the two-day teach-in of the International Forum on Globalization. Next week, you will hear about the impact of the WTO on food and agriculture. Among the speakers will be José Bové, goat farmer and cheesemaker from the south of France. He arrived in Seattle with 400 pounds of his very delicious Roquefort cheese. He and his fellow farmers in the Confederation of Peasants suddenly found that huge tariffs had been slapped on their cheese exports to the U.S. in retaliation for France's refusal to accept U.S. beef that is routinely injected with hormones. The U.S. appealed to the WTO and had been given permission by the WTO to retaliate against agricultural products of France. The U.S. created a list of products that currently are penalized by high tariffs. This list gave the first real-life experience of the power of the WTO to a group of French farmers. Here is José Bové.
We saw a list of products of France and Europe, and we are in a little area in the south of France, and we're very surprised to see that our cheese was on this list. It was the first time that we had to do something with WTO. We didn't think that we are in our farms in the south of France, WTO is going to come and see us. But in fact, that was it. So we went to see the French government. We went to see also in Brussels, the European Commission, and we asked them, "What can we do? What are you going to do for us? What are you going to do with that sentence?" And all of them said, "But we can't do anything. When WTO decides something, we can't do any more. So you go back to your farm and you wait and see." And we came back and we asked to the farmers, "What are we going to do now?" And we have a big meeting and the farmers decide we have to make a demonstration to show that to people, to French people, that WTO can have a direct effect on your own life. And that's why we decide to go to demantle a McDonald's. So why did we go to dismantle McDonald's? Well, I think you know more than us what kind of food you eat inside, huh? So, but we are discovering all that. And what we are discovering is not very good. So we prefer you keep this at United States. But what we see is the kind of food is there. Of course, it's a real globalization. You can eat the same Big Mac in Mio, where I live, in Seattle, in Singapore, and everywhere in the world, you can eat the same thing. There's no more culture. There's no more difference between food. And it's very the most basic way to eat. And I'm not sure if that really is eating, but that's what they say. But that's not only food. It's also industrial agriculture. Because we know that to make that kind of food, it's not a family farm who makes that food. It's industrial food. We know that there is only one kind of potatoes in all the world to make those kind of chips. There's only three kind of salad all over the world, and we know also that the meat which is inside is the worst meat you can find. If this goes on everywhere in the world, farmers, we don't need any more farmers to do such things. And it was also a symbol of a big multinational corporation, and that for those three reasons we decided also to go against McDonald's.
That was José Bové, French goat farmer, cheesemaker, and leader in the Confederation of Peasants, Confédération Paysanne Européenne. You will hear more from him on next week's program on the impact of the WTO on food and agriculture. You can get a 60-minute audio tape with Laurie Wallach and José Bové for $12. Or you can get the 80-page transcript of the full series, The Day the WTO Stood Still, with Laurie Wallach, Vandana Shiva, José Bové, on issues of genetic engineering, privatization, water and food security, environmental impacts, and much more. That's $12 as well. For a credit card order, call toll-free at 1-877-TUC-TAPE. That's 877-TUC-TAPE. Or send your check to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141. That's TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. TUC Radio's website is www.tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.